Evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jason and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Jason.
Housekeeping, we will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previous recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, the courage to change the things that can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety?
Hey Dan.
On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Action. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12, part two. Please welcome our panel this evening, Scott and Alan. I will read the first paragraph on page 96, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So step 12, part two is carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Page 96. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Scott?
My name's Scott. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've been continuously sober since August 7th of 2011. And when I first got sober, and when I first sponsored, I thought it was really important that every person that I sponsored stay sober, or that it was a poor reflection upon myself. And what I found out is that that's not true at all. And, I found out that people who were my friends in sobriety stayed sober more often than my sponsees stayed sober. And so I realized that it was probably better for the world if I encourage people to be my friend rather than encourage them to be my sponsee. and so at first it was just like, I'm going to do this perfectly. And I really thought like I had control of someone else's sobriety. And what this says to me is that, just try not to be overbearing. And the truth is that my character defect of being overbearing is I really want to take credit for what you've done. And so as long as I just put it in a situation where like, I'm not taking credit for what you've done, but I really want you to survive. And I understand that you suffer from the same disease that I do. Then I'm going to do everything that I can to help you and understand that the results are with you and with God. With all of that ego that's been tied up in trying to make sure that someone stays sober perfectly, I've had to, do a sixth and seventh and a 10th step on, why do I think that way? And so I have to say a prayer before, and it's like, look, man, I'm not perfect. I'm a human who stole things and has lied to a lot of people and I'm a scumbag and I'm a, you know, and I'm an alcoholic and here I am 11 years sober. And this is what I've done to do this. And if you want anything like what I've had, this is the path that I took, and you're welcome to take this path. The only guarantees I can make are in the book. And that's rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. But, you know, that has to do with sobriety. That doesn't, you know, I can't guarantee that you're going to be a millionaire. I can't guarantee that you're going to like everything around you, or that, you know, everything's going to work out exactly how you think it is. Cause, you know, I thought I had some preconceived notions about when I got sober that just didn't come true. And I have a better life today than I would have had I got everything that I wanted. And in terms of what the reading is talking about, I really just, whenever I'm talking to a new guy, I just focus on what it was like for me and what I had to do to get sober, and kind of piecemeal like what that was doing for me. And it's up to them as to whether or not they want to do the work. And the people who have asked me to sponsor them, I just say, you know, like, I've got other people that are counting on me as well. I'm gonna give you some things to do that I had to do. And if you can't do them, then you need to find a sponsor who, you know, who's willing to work with a guy who can't do the work. And I was like, but that's what my sponsor told me, and it got me off the fence. So I was like, if you want to get off the fence, I'm your guy. If you don't want to get off the fence, then you know, you might need to look for someone else. But thanks for letting me share.
Sure. My name is Ellen. I'm an alcoholic. Hello. I have a sobriety date of December 11th, 2020. I have a home group. My home group is Sandbridge Big Book Study. We meet on Tuesdays at 8. I do have a service position at my home group. I am the secretary. I do have a sponsor who is aware that he is my sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor, and that continues for a long way up. I have been granted the gift of, you know, the solution of this program. And that is strongly, or like largely, because of the person that I chose to be my sponsor, the person that I asked to be my sponsor. In terms of the reading we just read, you know, when I first came back into the program this time around, I was really kind of like keeping the idea of sponsoring, this is not working for me, sponsoring other people, like at a really far thought from my head. You know, as I think most of us struggle with, I had a really, really large ego coming into this program. It has not gotten that much smaller, but it's gotten a little leveled. But, you know, at the same time, I have this ego of like, kind of what was shared, like, you know, either if you succeed with my help, it is all because of me and I have done everything for you. And if you fail and you're involved with me, then I am the biggest piece of crap on the planet. And I, you know, just all or nothing. And in terms of sponsorship, I do currently have the immense pleasure of sponsoring another woman. But, you know, as far as that, otherwise, I have not sponsored a ton of other people. And, you know, my experience with what's been read so far, I've actually had experience in my life with other people who were very, very sick that I was very close to and loved very dearly. And, you know, it kind of goes on the same side of the same saying here that, you know, nothing I can do or say or try to harp into your mind is going to solve this problem for you. And before coming into this program, that was something that I struggled immensely with. I could not get my head around the fact that it either was or was not my fault. And, you know, since I started working with my sponsor, I'm very fortunate that my sponsor is somebody who is very, very to the point with what he believes is, you know, and what his experience has been. And you know, he made it clear to me very quickly on that, you know, all I have is my experience and that's all I can give you. And if at any point you are not jiving with the way that I've been shown how to do this program, that's fine, but we're gonna have to, you know, you're gonna have to find another sponsor. Which, again, my ego at the time, that was like very hurtful for me to hear, because in my mind he's saying like, I don't care which he was, which was hard for me to hear that I wasn't super special and important to him. But, you know, the book makes it so clear that we have to have this attitude towards all newcomers and towards people that we work with, because, you know, we are prone to getting really emotionally attached to people. And, you know, we want to be the director and the savior, and we want to do, you know, we want you to survive, and we want to be the biggest reason, or at least in my experience, I want to be the biggest reason why you have survived. And so, you know, when it comes to sponsorship, it took me a long time to almost like push my own ego to the side in terms of like, I felt like, you know, I don't know if I have the things that someone needs. Like, you know, I know that my recovery works for me, but I don't know if I can transmit it to other people, which, I mean, the book literally says you can't transmit something you haven't got. So something didn't make sense in that statement. You know, and once I just remembered that I have the tools from this book and through my sponsor, like I have all the tools needed to assist somebody in getting to where I am. And, you know, this whole notion of, you know, you don't have to push. In fact, don't push with them. If they want it, that's awesome. If they don't, let it go. That's a very difficult concept for someone like me. You know, again, I am majorly in the category of like, I want to be the director of everyone's lives, and I'm a massive control freak. And I think I kept the idea of being a sponsor, especially in the very beginning, really far away, because to me, that's like the ultimate, you know, giving up of my control. Like, you know, I want to help people, but I don't want to watch them fail, and I don't want to watch them, you know, maybe not succeed. And again, that's so much of my ego coming into play, because nothing I do or say, or, you know, nothing about my actions is going to either save or kill somebody via their alcoholism. You know, it's so much to do with what they are willing to do and what action they're willing to take. So, you know, this, now that I have gotten this newer sponsee of mine, really following the instructions of this book, and specifically this portion of the book, and just kind of like letting her, not so much meet her where she's at, but let her meet me where I'm at. Like, this is all I have to offer you. And you know, you can either do it or not. And, you know, in the beginning, my sponsor and I had to talk a lot, and still do, about being assertive without being aggressive, because in my mind, assertive and aggressive are the same word. And I do not do well with like being lovingly tough with people. Does not really clock with me, or hasn't for a while. But, you know, I've learned that it's so much more than like, if I can just put my ego and my little like weird anxious insecurities to the side, like this is a chance to save someone's life and to assist them in saving their own lives, I should say. And, you know, if they are coming to me, that means that they've seen something in myself and in the people that I'm involved with, like something within our message that holds depth and weight. And, you know, all they're asking me, they're not asking me to save their life or anything like that. They're just asking me to show them what my sponsor showed me and did with me. And, you know, that's something that I can easily do if I just stay in this book and stay in the guidance of this book and don't take it out into Ellen's world of ego and self-confidence issues. So that's all I've got for that. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you both. Off to a good start. Page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house.
I'm Scott. I'm a recovering alcoholic. So I got sober in Lafayette, Indiana, and I got into the military by accident. After I got sober, I was kicked out for drinking, and under weird circumstances, the person who had the power to to put me into the military, was in Al-Anon, and while I was getting sober, he adjusted some paperwork and I was in and out of a ton of trouble, as a result. And so here I was moving around the world, going to, you know, I've been to meetings in Singapore, I've been to meetings in Thailand, I've been to meetings all over the United States, and I've seen a lot of things. And if you stay sober long enough in Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll see some things that will really open your eyes to some stuff. And there's actually a guy in New Orleans who said, I was at a meeting in New Orleans. I was sent there by the military to go to a squadron with no planes. And I thought they were trying to get me a DUI when I was early in sobriety, and finally really kicked me out. And that's why I thought I was there, was so that I could get in trouble and they could end it with me. So here I was, in a place with no work, getting paid extra money to stay in a hotel in New Orleans. And so I was going to ask my sponsor what to do. He says, you need to double up on your meetings. You need to start sponsoring guys. And it was like, okay. And I got to see a man say he was sober. I don't know how many, he was like sober a couple, it was either like 20 years or something like that, but he'd lost 13 family members in 13 months. And he was the manager of all the funerals and the estates. And he said, I don't know how my life could get any worse, but here I am doing what I'm supposed to do to stay sober. And I'm like, that just spoke volumes to me about what Alcoholics Anonymous can do for a person who is biologically programmed to go pick up a drink whenever, whenever it starts raining wrong. And and here's this guy who got through, who's supporting all these extended family members through 13 deaths in 13 months. And he said, if I can stay sober, anybody can stay sober. And he didn't look like he was in a happy place. You know what I mean? Like, and he was doing it. He didn't look like, he looked like something was going on there that like no one could comprehend except for like him and God. You know what I mean? Like he wasn't super happy, but you could just tell that something was going on there that was like real special, in a really painful way. And I really don't know how to describe that, but it really made me believe like there is no end to what this program can do for someone in any situation, to be going through that. I've known people to go through every life experience that can happen. I have really good friends that have gone through cancer and cancer treatment, and survived. I've known people to get married, you know, including myself and some other people, to get divorced, to lose their kids in sobriety, and have stayed sober and stayed in service. And there's really no reason to pick up a drink. But I was one of those guys who showed up, and I like to share this because a lot of guys have this in common. I showed up with a $110,000 money problem that I thought a sponsor would help with, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I show up here and I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do about this money problem. And then, you know, I was supposed to go to jail. And so I was trying to figure out what to do about the jail problem. I thought people were going to have answers to that. And they told me to stay sober and everything else will work itself out. And I'm like, dude, I don't think you're hearing me. Like, I owe the federal government $110,000. Like the clock is ticking. I have nine months and 13 days until I'm in serious trouble. Like, I need to come up with this money. And they're like, just stay sober. Everything else will work out the way that it's supposed to. And one day I was like, that's an answer you tell somebody when you don't have an answer to something. And I like turned around and walked away, and everybody was just sitting outside smoking cigarettes. Like, all right, there's Scott like going off on his thing again. Like, stay sober. You know, I'm like walking around. They're like, stay sober, man. You know, and it's like, who are these guys? And, it was like, just the stuff was happening, but for some reason, I really thought that if I could just take care of all that other stuff, then I'd be able to take care of the alcohol thing. And and it was totally the opposite. One day it was a very important day in my sobriety. And I remember the day, it was 87 days sober. And I found out a guy died in Alcoholics Anonymous who thought the things that I thought about myself. He was talking about being a big shot, and he was he was like kind of talking like he ran things. He was a real manly man. Not going to let anybody else tell him what to do. Didn't have a sponsor. And, you know, I'm like, man, I want to be like that guy. I don't want to have a sponsor and like have to go to all these meetings, show up early and make the coffee and clean, you know, like this is BS. You know, I shouldn't be doing this. I should be like that guy. And, you know, and my sponsor's like, here, sit over here. I'm like, yes, sir. You know, it's like, yeah. And, okay, John, do you want coffee? You know, it's like, and I'm like, God, I need to be more like that guy. And the guy died. He picked up a drink and he died that night and in a drunk driving accident. And his daughter went into the system because her mom wasn't able to take care of her. And I just remember that's what an alcoholic death looks like. That's what it looks like when, you know, when we're not doing this stuff. And that day was critical for me because that got me away from, that got me so scared that I would cause that much pain to a child and my community around me, that it wasn't going to be like a cool death. I like, for some reason, thought I was going to go out and in like a Bruce Willis way or a James Bond way. You know, like I had all these ideas. I didn't have access to any of those cool things, but I had all these ideas that someone would give me access to them, and then that's how I'd die. And so I was watching this guy. And it was the first alcoholic death where I really thought, I'm like that guy. I want to be that guy. And he died like that. And I was like, I don't want to die like that. And then when people were like, just focus on staying sober and everything else will work out the way that it's supposed to, it like all made sense. It was like, okay, I'll do whatever you say. You know, and I didn't consciously make that decision outwardly because I was afraid to tell people that I was on the fence before I was 87 days sober, but I was on the fence. I was like, dude, I got to figure out all this other stuff. I need to make some quick cash. I know the cartel's paying in Mexico. And, you know, like, I got to figure out a way to stay in this country, you know, and that was where my head was. And, you know, and that was my experience. Was I got so scared that I was like, I don't care, whatever you guys tell me to do. If I have to go run down the street naked, I've done it before, I'll do it again. And, you know, whatever you tell me to do, it's going to be fine. And, so I started focusing on staying sober. And by the time I was 9 months sober, I was given a degree from the university that I was asked not to come back to. And when I was 10 and a half months sober, I was commissioned into a military that I wasn't allowed back. It was the biggest POS that had ever come through that command. That's what I was told. And they would personally see to it that I left the military without a commission. And I was commissioned into the military, and then they wiped my debt. And then when I went to court, they said, we don't have any paperwork on you. You're a free man. You can turn around and leave now. And, you know, it was like July of 2012, and all these things had gone away, and I was sponsoring guys, and I was just so confused as to how my life could turn around. But I did nothing there. I didn't do anything about those activities. I didn't make any money. I didn't, you know, I just did the steps. I just made amends. I made amends to the people I was supposed to make amends to, because I was afraid to die. Like that other guy was afraid to die. And the reason I share that is because it's not all rainbows and butterflies, you know what I mean? Like I was depressed. I was thinking, dude, like that's a lot of money, you know, that's a lot of money. And the military said they're going to send me to prison if I don't pay them, you know, and then there's other stuff that I'm supposed to go to jail for, you know, it's like, how do you come up with all this stuff? Nobody's got any answers. You know, the guys I'm asking for these answers are janitors. Like, where am I going to get $110,000? And the guy's like, I don't know, man, I push a broom for a living, you know, like stay sober, you know, it'll figure itself out. I'm like, what am I doing here? And they were right. All of them were right. And, you know, and the reason that I share that is because stuff like that doesn't happen, you know, every day. It happens in Alcoholics Anonymous every day, because I've been able to travel and I've been able to see people other places and go to, you know, I'm mandated to go to meetings every time I travel by my sponsor. And the blessing is that I've been able to see things like that and blessings all over. And stuff like that does happen everywhere in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but it doesn't always happen for like the normal person. So this is a very special place. So stick around and see some really cool stuff happen.
Ellen Alcoholic. So when I was, I got sober in December of 2020, and for about the first year, I would say, of my sobriety, I similarly was like pretty depressed most of the time. I probably wouldn't have like said I was depressed, but I was very frustrated all the time because, you know, I felt very strongly that I was doing all the things I was supposed to be doing. And, you know, I didn't understand why everyone that I was around, everyone that was in my line of sponsorship was just like, not only so much happier than I was, but like, very obviously, like feeling the sense of like fulfillment and purpose that I was not. And I was just like, you know, beating, what's that phrase? Like beating a dead horse or whatever, just could not understand, you know, what I was doing wrong and why was this going differently for me? And, you know, at no point during that time did I have any active thoughts of like, I should just go get drunk, like, you know, fuck this, sorry, frick this. But, you know, at one point I do very vividly recall having a conversation with my sponsor on the phone, where he basically said something along the lines of like, I'm misquoting, but something along the lines of like, you know, you're pretty dangerously close to picking up a drink again these days. And I remember kind of being like shell shocked at first when he said that. And then I was like, he's right. He's totally right. And you know, when I was during that time, when I felt like I was doing everything right, it's almost like I was doing things, but like just scratching the surface of these things. But more importantly, I was not like taking the action behind the things in the book. Like I would write out, you know, my inventory at night and stuff. And I actually recently looked back on one of them from like, I don't know, I think I was like 3 months sober. And I mean, it was literally just a list of me just complaining and talking about how much everything was hard for me and just like the most unhelpful thing. And I wanted really badly in the beginning to like figure everything out. I wanted to understand every aspect of this, like inside and out, which I realize in hindsight was just my alcoholism, like trying to keep me from like getting to the real like nuts and bolts of the solution. Because again, I'm a control freak and I want to microanalyze everything. And I want to tell myself that I can't be all about something until I fully understand every single thing about it, which all throughout my life has prevented me from being fully like immersed in things and in moments of life, because I'm so busy sitting over here, like trying to figure everything out. And, you know, I rely the reading at one point, you know, it says burn into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. For me, that anyone is heavily about me, myself. Like if I just stepped out of my own way, and the minute I did, which I didn't even really clock that I was getting out of my own way, but I just started like showing up when I said I was going to show up. I started like, you know, I used to call my sponsor like most of the time I was supposed to. I just started like not ever missing my calls. Like I showed up when I said I was going to show up. I prayed about things even when I didn't understand why I was doing it. Like I just put my money where my mouth is, and like everything got so much easier. Like I wouldn't say anything specifically materialistically occurred, but I just like everything felt easier. And I noticed those things happen, like how, you know, they talk about if you you know, try to seek God's will throughout the day, and it'll become, oh, I don't want to misquote my big book, but it'll become, you know, like second nature. Like you'll rely upon God consciousness instead of your own. You know, I would find myself when I was at work and I'm like pissed off, I go in the back and I all of a sudden realize that I'm sitting there trying to think of like, how can I be helpful? How am I misunderstanding the situation? How can I be, you know, helpful and peaceful and positive instead of negative and irritable and bitchy? You know, it was just one of those things where I didn't notice it was happening until it was happening. And I was so much happier. But, and you know, the thing is, like, at any point I can go back on that. Like I can stop doing those things again and I'll feel sad again and I'll feel bummed again. But all I have to do is the very simple actions that are provided in this book and do the simple things that my sponsor suggests I do. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people in my life die from this, like very painful, cruel, sad deaths. And, you know, especially one of them, you know, the biggest hurdle was that this person just could not accept that he was one of us. He just could not do it. He wouldn't let himself accept it. And, you know, he had the solution constantly being thrown at him, but he just didn't want to be what was in this book. I don't think you ever read the book, but you know, for me, the first time I tried to get sober, I very much realized how much I thought it was like I was circumstantially an alcoholic. Like I was in trouble and I was, you know, definitely these things described, but it was because of where I was at. And it was because I had lost somebody I loved. And it was because this person was affecting my life. But like, if none of those things had happened, I would still be my old normal self and I would never be in the situation, you know? And I, thank God I relapsed, like, thank God, because I had to go through that. I had to go through like pretty much the exact same thing happening for me to realize like, oh, it's me. Like, it is not anybody else. And it's not anything that's occurred in life. Like, this is just who I am. And, you know, the minute I realized that, you know, if I just step out of my own way, because honestly, like, I was very, very miserable plenty of times before I got sober. But being miserable and being sober is so terrible. Like, it is not a place I ever want to be again. Because, you know, I'm just sitting here like, why can't I get this? I don't want to drink and I don't want to use anymore, but I also don't want to keep being miserable and being sober. Like, what, you know, such a jumping off point, like the book says. And, you know, it's just amazing to me how much I can just like blockade myself from such a simple solution. But, you know, now that I've kind of burned into the consciousness of my own mind that this does work. It is not because I'm some special, unique circumstance that this does not work for. Like, this works. And it's so simple if you just do it and you just show up to like what you say you're going to show up to. And I mean that like metaphorically and literally, you know, if you just dedicate yourself to this solution, like, it gives you back more than you could ever give to it. And, you know, I've talked about that before. Like, I couldn't even touch the surface of giving back to this program, what it has given to me. Like, I could never come close to it, but now I have the purpose of like trying my best to give it away to other people for the rest of my life. And that's such a gift. And all I can do is hope that if people who struggle in the way that I did, in that, you know, I'm the person standing in my own way, that you just step aside and just do the things, even if it doesn't make sense. And even if you feel dumb or just like, this is so silly, like, be silly. It's fine. You know, because the way I feel these days compared to that first year of sobriety, I mean, I'm, you know, in hindsight, I'm really glad that I made it through that first year of sobriety, because it's like, reflecting back on it, I'm like, I'm kind of surprised I stayed sober, you know. But I honestly, it was because I had such a strong sponsorship, you know, around me, and a sponsor, and like the people around me. Like, I was fortunate enough to be surrounded by people who were so clearly living in the solution and doing it very honestly, that I was intrigued enough by that and that I wanted to keep trying. You know, if I had stepped away from those people even a little bit, I think I would have gotten drunk again for sure. Like, you know, you have to find someone who, you know, is properly armed with the facts about themselves, and a person that, you know, has been through things in a way that they definitely understand what you go through. Because that was the biggest thing for me with my sponsor, was like, I would get so resentful at him, like, so often in the beginning, but I believed that he understood what was happening. And so I listened very resentfully at times, but I listened and I kept calling, because I didn't want to let go of what I somehow knew was like the thread keeping me in the program at the time. And that's like kind of an example of like what sponsorship can do. You know, if you are just honest and clear with people about what this program has done for you and how you got it, and, you know, that you are willing to give it to them, you know, you can keep them hanging on even when they feel like nothing's working. And that's been my experience. So thanks for letting me share.
Continuing the reading on page 98. Now, the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effects on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
My name's Scott. I'm an alcoholic. This is always super difficult to work through as a sponsor. I have been asked, what should I do with my money? I've been asked, how should, my wife's doing this. How do I make her change? And, my wife is leaving me. How do I keep my wife around? Like, dude, I don't know your wife. When I got sober, I was also undateable and unmarriable. So, you know, if you're like me, everything happens for a reason. And, it all really comes back to the fact that the thing that I was told was, if you focus on staying sober, everything else will work out the way that it's supposed to. And I've seen guys that have, separated, and then, things changed and they've gotten back together. And then I've seen guys who have separated, and then the spouse has decided, like, hey, I want no part of this sober life, and then leave. And sometimes the guy who's getting sober is really hurt about that. And then they realize, if they stay sober, then they realize, like, hey, maybe I didn't want any part of that other life, and there's another life out there for me. And, and sometimes it's just a blessing altogether, but, a lot of good things and a lot of bad things happen in sobriety, and either way, it's better whenever we're sober and doing the steps. Something I do know is, there was a guy that I got sober with, one of the friends. So he stayed sober. And then, he was trying to figure out how to get his family back together. And, his wife was doing some drugs, and his kids were in the household, and he had moved out to a treatment center to get sober. And so we got sober within 6 months of each other. And the marriage didn't end up working out, but the guy's got sole custody of both of his kids. He's sober 10 years now, building 747s. And he gets to have a relationship with his kids. And that's all because when it comes to meetings, and he got something that he didn't necessarily know he wanted or even knew that he could have, because before he got sober, his kids were 2 and 4, and he did not have a relationship with his kids. So just because he had possession of them doesn't necessarily mean that he knows what's going on, that he's listening, that he's taking his own inventory, that he's figuring out, hey, how can I best reach this kid? How can I best make this kid feel hurt? And I don't know a lot of that stuff. I'm just, I remember, whenever I was getting sober with him, I was sober 6 months longer than he was, but like, I didn't have those life skills. And I'm like, dude, I've got very few life skills. I've read The Big Book and How to Win Friends and Influence People. I'm like, that's where I'm at, I've got no money. I've got no job. I've been fired from every job I've ever had. And people are like, hey, how do I deal with this situation? It's like, I have no idea, but we do this, we do the 10 step and we figure out where we're wrong, and we try to make it right. And we figure out, the next right thought or action. What I learned, and I actually don't know if this is in The Big Book or not. I think it's in the 9th step, is just like, just listening is better than what I was doing. Just like when someone, when a wife or a kid is talking, just like listening and not saying anything, like what you're supposed to do when you make the amends to like the person that you really want to say a lot to, like just listening and holding tongue and pen can make the situation so much better. And I found that a lot of guys, whenever they stay sober a little while, they start to have a capacity to just kind of like listen to their surroundings. And as they go through the 4th and 5th step and the 10th step, and that they really start to identify like where they can hold some space and hold some capacity for those around them. And people really like to be around someone who will listen. That's like a good quality. And I'm the kind of person that, like, when someone starts talking, I immediately think about what I'm about to say afterwards. So I'm like, shut that down, shut it down. Don't open your mouth. Don't say anything. And that skill is really helpful to just keep my mouth shut. It's kept me out of way more trouble, than me talking has. I'll put it that way. But yeah, there's a, this definitely, this definitely affects the family positive to get sober, and do the steps. You know, sometimes people don't want that either. And that can be okay too. So they used to say in my home group, we stay sober under any and all conditions. That was a 12-step quote. And so that was kind of like, where it was like, dude, if your life's falling apart, man, like we stay sober no matter what. It doesn't matter. Here we are. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Ellen, alcoholic. I'm very fortunate in regards to family. I'm one of two kids and I'm the baby. And I mean, throughout my whole life, my family has just been overly willing to go to any lengths for me and my constant struggles. And you know, I'm very, very fortunate that I don't have a lot of experience when it comes to having to like rebuild a home or a family. I don't have kids of my own. You know, but in regards to, you know, the family in general, throughout my experience in sobriety this time around, I've certainly had a couple moments where, you know, I've realized a lot that when it comes to my family and, you know, something sad might happen or, you know, I'm worried about something that might happen to, you know, one of them, with help of my sponsor, I have realized that I very, 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 very often am like entirely thinking of how that situation will affect me. Like, you know, my aunt a couple months ago was diagnosed with cancer and I'm on the phone with my sponsor talking about, you know, I don't know. What was I exactly saying? Something along the lines of like, I don't know how to like pray correctly for her. You know, I don't want to be selfish and pray for the wrong thing. Like just who knows what I was saying. And, you know, my sponsor pretty simply was like, well, have you like reached out to your aunt? Have you said anything to her? Have you just told her you're there for her? And I was like, well, no, but I didn't even have her phone number. You know, like I was like, no. And meanwhile, like I'm sitting here kind of griping to my sponsor about how I'm sad about this and I hope she's okay and I'm worried for her and I don't even have the woman's phone number. Like, you know, how much am I willing to do for other people? And so I got her phone number and I did I texted her and I should have called, but I texted her and I, you know, told her how much I loved her and that I just was here for her if she needed anything. And you know, I could tell that she was surprised, but touched, you know, to hear from us. My extended family and I aren't exactly super close. So just an example of like times, you know, when I'm just constantly being the epicenter of whatever's happening, if it's something happening to somebody else, like, you know, my parents are getting older and I'm kind of having a time with coming to grips with that. And I find myself very often thinking about how, you know, well, once my parents get to a certain age and they start getting a little more like, you know, not a little less independent and a little less like on point with things, but I'm thinking about how that's going to affect me and how it's going to make me sad and anxious. Like I'm not thinking about how that will be hard for my dad, who's a very independent man born in 1950, you know, like what can I do for them to make that an easier transition for them? Like, how can I be there for them and show them that they have me to rely upon? You know, those are not the first thoughts for someone like me. Those are not thoughts at all for someone like me until I got to this program. And until I learned that, you know, my natural course of thinking is entirely selfish and entirely self-serving. And, you know, it's to such a degree that I don't realize like I'm being a selfish person. Like in my mind, that's just how I think. And so, you know, I have to stop and kind of think, like my sponsor often talks about how we have to do the things that are like our mind doesn't want to do. Like if there's something I don't want to do, but should do, I should definitely do it. You know, when I don't want to go to a meeting and when I don't want to call somebody and I don't want to, you know, do whatever, like my natural line of thinking is always going to be pretty self-centered and self-consumed. But this program allows me to have a solution to counteract that so that I don't constantly, you know, behave based on those thoughts. And, you know, I've shared on this many times. One of the first longer conversations I ever had with my sponsor was me very panic spiraling about how I was petrified. And I mean, I can't stress enough how much this was like a very pivotal moment for me in my life. I was just petrified that I was just an inherently selfish, bad person, and that it was so deep within me that there was not a way to fix it. And I was so truly scared that I was, and not in regards to like AA solution, because this was so early on, we hadn't even like gotten into like the program just yet. I mean, I think this might've been like the second day we talked. And I'm just so concerned that I'm not going to be able to fix this, because I knew that my selfishness and my need to constantly put myself in the center of everything. Like, I knew how deeply ingrained in myself that was. And I knew that it wasn't at all like me choosing to be selfish. Like, that was just the way my brain operated. And I was scared because I saw how often it was just like wrecking my family and like just causing my family so much distress and people, anyone who even remotely loved me, distress. And I'm like, you know, the thought of not being able to turn that off at all or fix it or find any way to even like slightly remedy it was terrifying for me. And, you know, now, thank God, I've realized that, like, you know, to a degree, I will always be that very selfish, self-centered person, because that is just kind of who I am. But again, this program gives me the solution to get out of that and to get into the way of thinking that is serving to others first. And I don't constantly have to put myself in the center of everything. And when I do, I can catch it now. Whereas before, it was just the way it was. I didn't see any other way. And that's such a gift, because, you know, that was one of the things throughout my entire life that has caused me the most just like sadness, was thinking that I was just an inherently defective person, which is also kind of a way of me like sitting in my crap, because like, if I can't fix it, then like I can't fix it. So now I realize, you know, there are things about myself that I have to kind of constantly counteract and fight against. But the more I do it, and the more I kind of do it very consciously and actively, the more it becomes a subconscious thing. And the more I don't have to like constantly like keep an eye out for it, because it is just becoming second nature that I kind of make sure I'm not being a selfish, self-centered person. And, you know, to know that it can get to the point where it does feel kind of natural is something that gives someone like me a lot of peace. Because I was just really petrified that I was just a bad person. And that's not a fun feeling, you know, for someone like me. I really wanted to be a good person, but I really didn't know that I was capable of not being a bad person. And this program has given me the tools to be, you know, the kind of person that I wanted to be and the kind of person that I was really, really afraid I was not able to be. And I mean, among the many gifts that this program has given me, that's one of the bigger ones. That one means the most, I would say. Well, not the most, but that one weighs a lot for me. So thanks for having me.
Page 100, follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstance. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. Even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem.
Scott, alcoholic. This is my most debated and least favorite phrase in the big book. The reason is, whenever I got sober, I was told to stay away from alcohol. And I said, well, I can go anywhere if I'm spiritually fit. And my sponsor said, yeah, but you're not spiritually fit. That's the point. And so, you know, he told me to stay away from people, places, and things that had anything to do with alcohol. And I would go to, you know, and my home group was very big on this for new people specifically in their first year, or who hadn't gotten to page 100 in the work in the book. And so I just thought, man, they're making this big deal about this physical separation from alcohol. And you know, to do the work, and some of the other meetings weren't doing that, but they were having a lot of like success with new people staying sober that chose not to eat lunch in bars anymore and that kind of stuff. And I have realized that there's something to that. I went to a meeting, this other meeting in New Orleans, where there was this one guy sober like 36 years, and he was taking all they went to the same place to eat every time. And it was this like jazz and liquor club after the meeting. And there wasn't anybody sober longer than 6 months. There were like 30 people in this meeting, 30 or 40 people in this meeting. There was a guy sober 36 years and a bunch of people sober less than 6 months. And I showed up and I was sober like around almost a year. And they're going out to this liquor club every night where they're like, there's people drinking everywhere. There's girls trying to convince people to take shots. And I'm just like, why are we taking new people here? And the guy's like, it's not my fault if they end up getting drunk. And I'm like, dude, like we need to take them to like Denny's or someplace that like, they're not staring at like, you know, chicks in sequin, like trying to get him to drink a shot. Like this is not the place to take a new person to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, he starts quoting the spiritually fit stuff. And I'm like, these guys don't have sponsors. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what are we doing? And, you know, so I get a lot of this, like, weight, you know, waving me off of like, hey man, I really like to not take this new guy to a bar to, you know, to talk to him about getting sober. I don't want him staring at the tap, while they're filling people's drinks, while I'm trying to talk to him about what being powerless over alcohol. Cause he's clearly seeing that he's not spiritually fit. He's sitting in a bar and he's not picking up a drink, which is telling him he doesn't need this program. I'm showing him he doesn't need this program. And so, you know, something that this says, it specifically lists a series of items. And then it also says alcoholics are not supposed to do these things right in front of them. So without the program, without having completed the ninth step on a path, doing the 10th, 11th and 12th step, alcoholics do not belong in any of those places. That's what the big book says. If you read it that way. And it also talks about the, you know, the, how you define if you're spiritually fit. Well, the problem was, you know, I talked to my sponsor about this because I'm an academic and, you know, I'm putting up quotations. I'm a guy who doesn't want to follow the rules. So, I'm like, oh, well, you know, what if I'm spiritually fit and then I can go to these places? And he said, Scott, did you think it, when you robbed your grandparents, did you think it was a good idea at the time? I was like, yeah, well, I needed money and I knew they were asleep. I knew where the valuables were. So I just got in and got out. And yeah, I thought it was a good idea at the time. He's like, are you really the person who gets to decide whether or not you're spiritually fit? Are you the person to make that decision, knowing that about yourself? And he said, you need to check with someone else anytime you think you need to deviate from these instructions. And I was like, man, you know, I really thought he was going overboard with it, but I've seen so many people go to a work event for the, you know, it's like the 15th work event where there's drinking and people are encouraging him to take a drink. And then they drink at the fifth, you know, at the 15th one and they don't want to hear anything about it. And so I know there's a ton of controversy about this, but I don't take new guys to places that serve alcohol if I can. There are certain parts of the country and the world that don't have that, you know, but they're a little bit less than like, you know, some go-go girls trying to get you to take shots. Definitely not that place. But it's really, I think it's really important. And my experience has shown that it's been really important to have a place that a new guy can focus to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I won't say that, you know, I've gone around alcohol since I've been sober. I've been sober 11 years, and where I'm at spiritually and where I'm at life experience wise in sobriety is different than where I was at when I was 30 days sober. It's different than where I was at when I was 90 days sober. It's different than where I was at when I was a year sober. And it doesn't mean that my time alone makes it different. It means I have worked at this program with all of my effort in austere environments, in scary environments, to try to grow spiritually nonstop for 11 years. And I'm in a different place today than I was when I was 90 days sober and still robbing people at 90 days sober. You know, so a guy who is 90 days sober and still robbing people thinking, well, I'm spiritually fit, so therefore I can go to all these places that serve alcohol and I can live this life. And I just want to make that point. But also because I've done all this stuff, and I still do check with people. If I'm going to a drink event, I call an alcoholic on my way to the work event. And I talk to him. And there have been times, my wife's in the program too. There have been times where we've been like, tonight's not the night. Like, I'm going to have to call it in. I cannot go to this work event. I can't be around these people. I can't be around this environment. Like, tonight's not the night. And she said the same thing. We have nights where we're like, this is just not it. I'm super angry. I'm resentful at this. I haven't worked through this resentment. I do not need to sit and smile in front of everybody and say no to 30 people when they're offering me a drink. I do not need to be there. And it talks about that. A lot of people don't see that in that phrase, but it talks about that. The program isn't about only staying away from alcohol. The program is about doing all this work so that we don't have to worry about that stuff anymore. So the point being, that I do the work and therefore, areas of the world open. The nice thing is I'm just not attracted to that stuff anymore. It stresses me out. I get super uncomfortable in the big partying environments where I'm like, that dude's going to drive home and he's at 8 drinks. And I really just don't want to be here to watch him walk out the door with his keys. Or that dude just did this super unsafe thing and he's going to go drive his car or they're going to go get into a situation or they're going to hurt somebody. And I know because I used to look like that before I went to hurt somebody. And it's like, I just really don't feel comfortable going to those places. And so that's what I'm gonna say about that statement in the big book. It's a little dark and gloomy, but that's what pops up because everybody says, look, you've arrived to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Welcome, you're 30 days sober now. You can go back to the bar that you used to hang out with and have a great time. And that's not what I'm here to tell you. So I'm here to tell you, you're in a place that it's time to do the work and we'll see, we'll see how it goes. Thanks for letting me share.
Ellen Alcoholic.
Yeah.
A thing that my line of sponsorship does that I'm very, 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 very thankful for because someone like me needs it to go this way is we work fairly quickly and we do the steps all in one day. I'm very glad that we do it that way because someone who is a chronic alcoholic like myself, if you give me any amount of time to step away, I would step away. I needed it to be done this way. And because of that, I actually love this part of the book because I went to rehab the first time I tried to get sober. And I was just kind of talking about that, it seemed like such a great idea at the time, but then you get out of this 30-day like happy little place where there is no drugs or alcohol. And I'm like, oh, drugs and alcohol still exist out here. That's not good. This time around, with the experience that I've had, on page 85, it says, we will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. For me, I this is like the thing that I've understood the quickest, I guess, is that once I did the steps and once I even began scratching the surface of figuring, coming to terms with what the spiritual malady within me that causes me to have, this reaction, beyond the physical part of this illness, once I started to scratch the surface and deal with those things, it was removed from me. One of my happiest experiences in my sobriety this time around was I'm from Richmond and I went home one weekend to visit with some friends and they are all not alcoholics. They were drinking and, doing the things that they do. And I was fine. I was so fine. And I remember driving home the next morning, crying because I was so happy that I had felt no desire to drink and no sense of jealousy or uncomfortableness. I felt oh my gosh, I'm able to participate in this event with my friends that I love so dearly. And not only am I not like feeling tempted and stressed out and like wanting to drink, but I'm not just like sitting here consumed with my own thoughts. Like I was actively participating in that moment with my friends. And that is something that, you know, I imagine they were also really excited about because it had been a very long time since they had seen me sober, much less like actively asking them about themselves and not being who I usually am. And you know, this is like, this is one of my favorite things about if you work this program the way it's laid out, like you don't have to deal with that crap. And like, what a terrible thought that is. The first, you know, when you're first thinking about getting sober and you're like, okay, so now I can never go into bars again and I can not go near a liquor store again. And, you know, if I smell weed in the air, I'm going to crumble. Like, you know, it's, I don't know. I've noticed, you know, when I tell my non-alcoholic friends, like if they invite me somewhere or something and, you know, bless their hearts, they're nice people. So they're like, you know, do you want us to like not do X, Y, and Z around you? Are you okay? I'm like, dude, it's all good. Like, I promise you're fine. And I know that it's probably their first thought that I'm either like, they're like, oh no, is she okay? Like she's saying it's fine. Like maybe that means she's not doing well. And it's like, it actually is like the total opposite. And that freedom for me is like one of my favorite things. Like I get the most jazz talking about this stuff because I'm like, you know, I used to be the person that if I heard a particular song that I used to like get high to, I'd be like twitching, like, oh no. Like I, you know, anything and everything was a trigger for me back then. And, you know, any idea of being around alcohol or anything else was very, very hard for me. And, you know, that's exactly why, because I was so far from spiritually fit. I had not worked the program properly. I was not in touch with a higher power of my understanding. I was everything you should not be to be spiritually fit. And so, of course, these things were terrible and tempting. And, you know, it felt like spooky, scary things that I couldn't go near. And now, like, just to have that freedom of, like, you know, being in a place of neutrality and not feeling tempted by it or hateful towards it. You know, I don't feel like, you know, my friends who aren't alcoholics, I'm not like, man, like you suck. Like, why do I have to be this way? Why do you get to be that way? Like, you know, it just is the way it is. They don't feel the things I feel, and I feel the things I feel, and I experience the reaction I have to alcohol and substance, and they don't. And I'm thrilled for them that they don't, but you know, I can't change the fact that I am this way. And so if I properly work this program and stay in constant contact with my higher power, I feel no quarrels about being near alcohol. I can be around any other thing too. It doesn't faze me. And I love that I can like so honestly say that. Like there's no part of me that's like, I mean, sometimes it's kind of hard. Like it's not. It's just not. Because I have dealt with the spiritual malady within myself. And because I've done that and also constantly work this program and stay in contact with my sponsor and do the things I need to do to remain in that place of neutrality, you know, I get to participate because, you know, in my opinion, especially with drinking, like it's a very large part of most people's lives and it's a big part of most social events that occur. And, you know, if I were to tell myself that I couldn't go to anything that involved alcohol or anything else, like I would not go anywhere, you know, because there's little you can do that doesn't have those things. And, you know, if you are feeling really uncertain about it and you feel like if I go there, I'm going to participate, like for sure, don't go, like by all means, but like also get moving in the other direction and like start calling somebody and get to work. Like if you do these steps in this program, you will not feel that in my experience, you won't feel that constant dread about, you know, alcohol and being near it. Because, you know, I drank because, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to drink. But, you know, a lot of that had to do with the issues within myself and that spiritual malady. So if I deal with those things, then I've at least kind of dealt with one of the parts of why I drink. And so I'm on better footing to be able to experience life, you know, happily and joyfully and freely. You know, this whole program is about being free and about finding a way to live life that I'm not a slave to this thing, which is alcohol. And, you know, if I'm having to hide from bars and, you know, liquor stores and anyone who drinks, like for me, that's not freedom. That is not freedom at all. Because, you know, again, most people I know can drink normally. So, you know, I'm so thankful that I've at least experienced that if you do this the way it's written in this book and you just do the simple things that need to be done. Like, you can be an active participant in life, whether there's alcohol around or not. That's all I've got. Thanks for the show.
That ends the discussion portion. Can we give Scott and Ellen a hand? Pass around the baskets in keeping with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help other alcoholics who still suffer. We have a PayPal and Venmo link as well. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any AA related announcements? Yes.
All right.
Thank you. We have one in this very room next week. We will have be hosting supper and a speaker at 6 p.m. will be potluck, and 7 p.m. speaker Debbie S. from Richmond will be here. So if you'd like to come, please bring others with you. Bring a dish if you wish. And again, the potluck will begin at 6 and the speaker will begin at 7.
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic. A very good member of our AA community here. Passed away recently. We're having a celebration of life event March the 4th at the Narrow at 10:30 a.m. You want to see what it's like if you stay sober and die sober. It'll be a pretty outstanding event. Dean Robertson is who passed. And then March the 17th through the 19th is the Appalachian Regional Roundup. It's in Kingsport, Tennessee. I know it's kind of far away for everybody. I'm certainly going to try and go because there's some really great speakers on the list. To name a few, Charlie P, Paul McQuaid, Bob D, Ralph W, and several others who have spoken on our Zoom during COVID. It'll be a fantastic event, $30 in advance, $35 at the door, and they have hotel rooms as well. So see me if you want the flyer afterwards.
Thank you. All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. The literature table is over there. Anything you can fold, you can put in your pocket. If you'd like to purchase a book, please see a home group member or myself. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to myself or any home group member, or you can email info@simpleactions.net and someone will respond to you. Meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella on Colonial Ave across from Bank of America and right next to Kogan's. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Closing, can we thank Scott and Ellen again for fantastic. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come up and thank them personally. I have asked Grant to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic. A vision for you from Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for them. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Get freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks for reading. Let's form a circle and hold hands and do the Lord's Prayer.